Well, welcome again, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for being here again for the second time today. You should now have the two documents that I spoke about earlier in the day being released today. The first being the third part of the Windsor Continuation Group's reflections to the bishops. And we've just had the second hearing session about that at 2 o'clock. And Bishop Clive Hanford is here again, the chair of the Windsor Continuation Group and the former primate of the province of Jerusalem in the Middle East. So Clive will address you first. And then the second document is, as I said, at 1:30, a very preliminary scoping document, really, which gives you some indication of the kind of topics that are going to appear, we think, in the reflections document at the end of the conference, subject to the work that goes on between now and then. So it will be added to, it might be subtracted from, who knows. The chair of that reflections group is the Archbishop of Perth, Archbishop Roger Hirft, and he'll speak to the work of that group and to the paper, explain, respond to any questions you have about that process as it's unfolding. But first, Bishop Clive, we're in your hands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would you like me to come up there? No, I come up, I think it's easier. I can see better. Good afternoon. As you will know, we held the second hearing in the Windsor Continuation Group. I spoke about it the other day of the first parts of our presentation. So I say again, these are preliminary observations that we have put out in order to stimulate conversation, to stimulate dialogue, to get feedback across the boundaries, if you like, within the communion, and that process is certainly beginning to pay off. We presented today the last stage of these preliminary observations. If you will recall that the first one said, where are we? The second one said, where would we like to be? And this one is, how do we get from here to there? And we proposed a number of things. Firstly, on the question of the moratoria, where there have been calls, and the Windsor report set out the request for a moratoria in relation to public rites of blessing, to the consecration to the episcopate of those living in partnered gay relationships, and for the cessation of cross-border interventions. We believe that to call for those will help us, as it were, to pull back, to draw breath, take stock, and the better dialogue together as we go forward from here. We suggested basically two ways of responding in the present situation. One was by the swift formation of a pastoral forum. Something like this has been called for by Windsor, by the primates meeting at Dromontine. There was talk in Dar es Salaam when the primates met of a pastoral council. We have spoken of a pastoral forum with the president, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who appoints the members, and with a bishop as the chairman, working very closely with the Archbishop of Canterbury, and a membership which recognises the breadth of the communion, both in terms of geography and in terms of view, if you like. We have seen that this could well be a body which might be one that could respond quickly where there is a pressure point in the communion. we've suggested that as the covenant process unfolds, this forum could or might, we're putting it no stronger than that at the moment, might be included in the covenant as a mechanism for achieving reconciliation. And then what about those parishes, dioceses, provinces that have broken away from their church as a result of the interventions? We've spoken of moratoria, particularly applied to some of the activities of the Episcopal Church of the States, for instance, of the church in Canada. But we also recognise that provinces like Nigeria, Uganda, the Southern Cone, have been involved in interventions. We wish to include all of those within the moratoria. And we wish to find a way of healing the breach that has been caused by these interventions. And so what we are proposing is a kind of safe space into which these dioceses, parishes, bodies that have pulled apart can come, which will not, they will not then be dependent upon primates or others in other provinces, but they will be held together in, I don't know what you can call it, kind of holding bay, I suppose, if you like. A safe space, which will have a very real link, not least pastorally, to the pastoral forum. And they can be there, held in trust, as it were, till the day when, through dialogue, they can return to their parent bodies. Now, we've been trying to find analogies for this kind of body. It's rather like if you've got a member of a family, perhaps a young member of a family who is not getting on at all with parents at the moment, or for some reason is out of court in the family, an aunt or an uncle can take them under their wing and gradually work for the restoration of the family. Or if you want a commercial term, the principle of escrow, we've been using that term as our sort of shorthand for this. You know, I mean, if I were buying a house, and there's a process to go through, I will put my money, say, in the safekeeping of a solicitor, a lawyer, who holds it on trust until the deal is completed, and then he hands it over to the person from whom I'm buying the house. So it's that kind of thing. You make an analogy from religious communities as well, if you like. They are fundamentally the things that we put as a way forward to lead us into the next stage, not a magic wand, in any means, but to at least give us a basis on which to talk and go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Let me try and put before you the sort of schema by which we have been working. The proposal, I think, at the conference, I'm not a part of the design group, but as I understand, the design of the conference is that every single bishop should have a voice, that the timid as well as the confident should be able to speak from their heart and their mind and be listened to with deep and profound respect. And so the way these happen, of course, is through our Bible studies in the morning, where a small group of about 7 or 8 bishops meet under the Word of God and reflect together on the Scriptures and bring their own perspectives to bear. Then those 8 bishops move into a group of about 40, which forms the Indaba process. And the Indaba process, as has been outlined, of course, is a respectful way of listening to one another. And varieties of questions and themes are given to us, and then we reflect upon them together, first in small groups of four or five, then as the whole 40 together. They have an animator, a person who helps the process, and a reporter who takes records what the groups are saying to each other in a variety of ways. And then there is each group was asked towards the beginning of the conference to nominate three persons from their group who would form the reflections group. And so those have now been chosen, and we've begun our work. And the task of the listener, so the reports come in, and then they are, as you can imagine, 16 reports on each particular theme. And then the listener's task, or the reflections task, as we meet together, is not only the content of what we receive, but also the spirit and the soul of the discussion that took place. And so there's a checks and balances, I suppose, of all that's going on in the conference so that nothing is lost. And yet to provide a document, I think, at the end of the conference that reflects a narrative, not an encyclical, but a narrative, not large reports, but again, what is happening as bishops engage with one another in respectful conversation, what could happen. So the first document that we have prepared, of course, has got a number of positives, as you can see, but also we have still to receive some reports from some of the groups, and that's still being sorted out. And by tomorrow evening, in fact, we should be able to produce a much fuller document which has got all the reports from the various groups together, and they will be translated, of course, into the languages. The other process that we have had is we produced this first document over the weekend from the various reports, and they're all there, the basic reports that have come to us from each of the groups. That will now go before that particular report will go before a hearing. They go back to the groups. They went back to the groups today, and we've had some feedback saying this is not exactly what we were saying in our group, or this particular thing has not been emphasized. And so we will rewrite the document in accordance with that. But there are three hearings from, not tomorrow, the day after, and there'll be three hearings where the whole conference has an opportunity of reflecting on the document itself. The themes that we have so far outlined, of course, is the introduction and the retreat, which were integral to the whole conference. And the way the narrative, of course, is formed is from Bible studies, from plenary sessions, from discussions that people might have. They bring it to their Indaba, and from there it is entered into the document that we call the Reflections document. And so far we have outlined Anglican identity, evangelism, social justice, ecumenism, environment, and of course today was other faiths. So the document is before you. It's a very preliminary document. As I said already, we've had some feedback saying this emphasis is not what we were expecting from our group. And so we've had to go back to the reporter and say, have you really taken this into heart? And so it's a process of conversation. And we hope at the end of the day, on the Saturday, to be able to produce for the conference a document which will be a narrative, a living, breathing narrative of the Church, the Anglican Communion. And we've been trying to be faithful to the Indaba process, which has four degrees of faithfulness. One is faithfulness to the Gospel, and that's why the Bible study groups are so critical, our engagement with the Bible. Faithfulness to the Indaba process itself of respectful listening. Faithful to the Communion around us, the Anglican Communion, but also being faithful to the bishops who have gathered here and that their voices, in fact, are heard. So thank you.
We're particularly grateful to Archbishop Roger. He's come out of the Reflections group. They're meeting now as we speak, working on this document. So, okay, let's see how we go. If you're asking a specific question about the text in the document, you might just tell us which page you're on and which dot point and so on.
Steve Waring, Living Church. My question, I'd like both bishops to comment. In section C, number 14, the contribution of the communion to evangelism, there's a number of bullet points, and then it goes over onto the other page, and it says, support those who are isolated in their diocese by initiatives such as that by GAFCON. Take that with the escrow holding for traditionalist dioceses, and I see the formation of a liberal and a conservative communion. The dioceses from liberal provinces will migrate into escrow, and individuals, parishes, dioceses, and conservative provinces will migrate into the non-GAFCON province.
Thank you. Do you want to comment on the meaning of the, of what's in the report, first of all?
I'm trying to.
Archbishop Roger.
Can you,
it's on page six of the document. So it's in the section on the contribution of the communion to evangelism, and then about halfway down that top list of dot points, the one that Mark begins support those who are isolated.
In fact, I've got a cross against it because one of the things that happened in our group when we met this afternoon was that when we were checking out with the group that had sent this, they wanted to rework that. So I'm not sure that I can accurately actually convey what they mean by it until I've checked it out in terms of what they actually want to say accurately about that.
So you need to appreciate that a lot of what you've got here is shorthand dot points that need to be fleshed out, and you shouldn't read too much into what's there at this stage. Did you want to respond
to that? Yes, I would, please. The escrow concept isn't something which can potentially build up. It is to deal with those who are already out to give what I've called a safe holding space. But it's not something which in the future, whoever wishes can opt into. It is not a growing body. It is meant to be a diminishing body as dioceses or whatever parishes return to their parent body.
Thank you. Right up the back.
Yeah. Yes, Kevin Carlson, Anglican TV. How far back does this escrow go? Suppose a church in the United States left it to their bishop and joined Kenya or Uganda. Are you saying they get their church back?
Are we talking about property now?
Property, church, yes.
That would require working out. We have not worked out the detail of that. This is broad brush at the moment, preliminary thoughts.
Possibility.
There's obviously teasing out to be done.
Ruth.
In the report of the observations group, the continuation group, it seems to suggest in the talk of retroactive action that Gene Robinson should resign to work. Now, also the conservative provinces, which have dioceses, which have become engaged in some of the border crossing actions. Some of them have in the past asked for financial oversight from the Archbishop of Canterbury. Is this a response to that request? Is that effectively what you are offering, financial oversight from Rowan Williams?
It didn't directly come up as a result of that. I would say that latter point is something which will doubtless be considered as we put flesh on this, the escrow concept. We are not anywhere intending to imply that Bishop Gene Robinson should resign as a result of what we have called for in our observations, because we are aware that Bishop Gene Robinson was elected bishop according to the processes of the Episcopal Church. Whatever we may think about that, nonetheless, we recognise that they'd gone through the process.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Ian Baxter, Lesbian and Gay Christian Movement. You said you're offering a safe space to conservative parishes and dioceses, but at the same time, there seems to be no offer of safe space for lesbian and gay people anywhere in the Anglican Communion. In North America, or indeed in those dioceses such as Nigeria, where even this week a Nigerian Anglican was given asylum by the British government because of some of the statements of the Nigerian church. It doesn't seem balanced in terms of safe space that's been offered.
I hear what you say, and it may not, because it is preliminary, go far enough on a number of fronts, on other fronts. These are preliminary observations. What I would say, though, is that on page 3 of our document, we did, under those three bullet points, which are under the heading Ministering Pastorally and Sensitively to All, reaffirm what was said in Lambeth Resolution 110 about people of gay orientation, people who are gays, being part of the church, to be welcomed, to be treated properly. And we called, actually, it's not there in the document, but we called for all bishops to work with their governments or to represent to their governments the need for the decriminalisation of any, you know, homosexual.
There was someone else in the front row here earlier. Was it you, sir?
Thank you. Jim Naughton from Episcopal Cafe. Bishop Platt, do you think that the report's reception will be affected by the fact that none of the members of the continuation group support the ordination of gay and lesbian?
Well, I can't answer that. I would hope that it's not a report, it's observations, but I hope that these will be accepted as an early stage in an ongoing conversation and dialogue. I'm not wanting to see it as a report and close down on where we are. These are preliminaries. This conversation and dialogue has to go on. What we are trying to do is to get to a point where we can have that dialogue on as wide a field as possible.
You made it, I think. Next. Did you have your hand up earlier? Did I mention that? Perhaps it was you.
Thank you. Bishop Clive, Mary Frances Schoenberg from Episcopal News Service. You've made a big point of these are preliminary observations. You just said it's an early stop in an ongoing dialogue and conversation. What's next? I mean, where do all these observations go if this is the third part?
We continue to... Well, they were one set of observations designed... divided into three parts, where we are, where we'd like to be, how we get there. We will now, as a group, take on what we have heard, the responses that we have had both from the floor in the two hearings and written observations that have been put to us as a result of the hearings, plus whatever else we have heard in conversations. We take them through then to the next stage. We, at the moment, are working on a time scale which leads up to the meeting of the Anglican Consultative Council in May next year, ACC 14. Before we get there, we will, of course, advise the person who has appointed us, namely the Archbishop of Canterbury. That's where we are.
And if I might add, Bishop Clive, I think I'm right in saying that this conference may take up this input too through the Indaba process,
yes,
as we in the days to come. Mm. Riazat was next, I think.
Riazat from The Guardian. Bishop Clive, I just want to pick up something that Ruth said earlier, that if you follow the moratoria to the logical conclusions, it would also mean churches from Uganda and Rwanda and Nigeria pulling out the United States. But you've just said that Gene Robinson was barely elected. So how do you reconcile the two? If he was barely elected, but then you're also asking people to retrospectively stop the consecration of partnered gay clergy, how will you enforce it? Do you see what I mean?
Yes, I think I see what you mean. I mean, what I said about Bishop Gene Robinson is that the Episcopal Church had gone through the processes according to their law and their process, you know, quite correctly. We are asking now, not that Bishop Gene Robinson be defrocked or whatever. I was told by a canon lawyer the other day that we don't have defrocking in the church now, which I found a great comfort. But We're not proposing that. We're just saying there shouldn't be any more.
Right.
No.
Thank you. Right down the back, you, sir.
Yeah, Klaus Menzel from the German Catholic News Agency. I got, first of all, a little question of understandings. Did I get you right that you said, in terms of parishes who broke away, that also the province of Uganda and Nigeria broke away from the Anglican?
No, I didn't say that. I just named them because I'd named the Episcopal Church and Canada and so on, out of, you know, fairness across the board. I named a couple of the provinces that have been involved in the interventions. They have not broken away. As far as we're concerned, they are, though not here, that is a sadness that we all feel, but they are very much part of the community.
And what about the Commission of Faith and Order?
You've had one question, madam. Yes, in the second row.
Yes, Bishop Clive, there feels to me to be a disconnect between these two papers, a report that suggests that the bishops feel that the way forward is through person-to-person relationships, diocesan partnerships, and so forth. And these recommendations feel fairly punitive in nature. Can you speak to that, please, to that disconnect?
Certainly. They're certainly not intended to be punitive. What we're seeking to do is to pull back. Say, can we exercise a bit of restraint, to pull back, hold off, take stock, to try to get us in to, on the jargon phrase, a level playing field, you know, so that we can talk to one another in our differences and across our boundaries. That's what we're seeking to do. And in that talking and understanding and listening, you know, conversation implies listening. That's part of the part of it. In that, there will be, we would think, an ongoing process, and relations are at the heart of that. So it is a relational exercise, if you like. So the two papers are not in contradiction.
I'll take the three people that I've indicated already, I would take, and then we'll probably have to be moving off to pray. George and Chris, and then you, sir.
Bishop Clive, George Conger, Church of England newspaper. I remember in Northern Ireland, the panel of reference requested as a matter of urgency by the primate, and it went through its processes and more or less was accounted a failure because there was no way. From all this work that was done, nothing really ever happened to him from his conclusions. How would you hope that this pastoral forum would not go down that same road of a great deal of effort, a great deal of time, a great report written, but no change at the end of the day? What would you think of that?
His way of working in detail obviously remains to be worked out. One thing I'd say is that we hope that this forum will be established speedily, that it will be a body that can respond speedily in a situation of tension and crisis, that it will do so quite as much by, if I may borrow the term again, relational ways rather than lots of written reporting.
Thank you, Chris.
Chris,
I've
been in the mainstream. On bullet point two, sir, of the question of the moratorium, could you please clarify what the moratorium refers to? Because the final sentence of bullet two applies to practices that may have been authorised as well as proposed for authorisation. So is the moratorium about authorisation or about practices that were able to take place whether authorised or not, of which there have been a significant number?
It is about a cessation where authorization has or may have been given. We are saying that authorization must for now cease. If there are any in the pipeline, they also must not be put into effect.
Sir.
Bishop Clive, on why bother with all of this question mark, the statement appears,
Anglicanism as a distinctive global expression of Reformed Catholicism. And then the words are used, diverse, patient, hospitable, and tolerant. Are those an apt description of Reformed Catholicism? One. And the second question would be, could such a Reformed Catholicism ever say no?
Right. Can I answer the last point first? There must be limits. As I said when I spoke to you the other day, the phrase has been used, unity in diversity. With that, one has to ask the question, what are the limits? And then, as we believe that a contribution of the Anglican Communion to the wider Christian world is that it is a world body, a global expression of Reformed Catholicism. We're Catholic, but Reformed. And the Anglican Communion is an expression of that. In classical Anglicanism, in Anglicanism as many or most of us have come to know it down the years, the adjectives diverse, patient, hospitable and tolerant, I would say, are fairly close to the heart of it, and I hope that we can realise those.
Can I just check, is that one final question for Archbishop Roger about his paper?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Richard Jordan from Congress. Archbishop, how will the material from the plenaries be fed in? I'm thinking specifically about the environment.
The various documents, of course, have been made available to those who are listening in. There have been specific DVDs that each Indaba group has had, which have come from the provinces itself. And so those will be fed in as a part of the process in answering specific questions. Thank you for the question.
Bishop Clive wants to say one last thing.
Yes,
before we go
I on. Wondered if I might have a response to your documents. My response. Just to say this, I hear on the Faith and Order Commission, one hears some pretty wild and wacky thoughts are going around in what I think is sometimes called the blogosphere, outside of this conference. It's even been referred to as the Grand Inquisition. I think I would be failing in my duty to my group if I did not make it clear that we are not proposing a Grand Inquisition. All we are simply trying to do is to bring together two already existing bodies, the Inter-Anglican Theological and Doctrinal Commission and IASCA, which is the International Anglican Standing Committee on Ecumenical Relations. We're seeking to bring those together, to work together, to achieve some coherence.
Thank you all very much. It'll be the spouses' focus tomorrow at 1:30, and then we'll be back into the Bishop's program on Tuesday.